All right then, welcome to another episode of the Tennis Galaxy podcast. I am your host Prasad, and joining me are Prakash and Raj K, and all excited because the predictions have come true. Some of them, 75% of them, Raj K. 75% of them. Yeah, and we are down to the final four. And any surprises, guys? Three out of the four are top three seeds. Plus Roberto Bautista Agut. And by the way, everyone playing is above 30. When did we have that? So all this and more on this episode of the Tennis Galaxy podcast. We are one day away from the semifinals of the Wimbledon and Fedel meeting number 40. Isn't it, Raj K? Is nearing us.
Yeah.
So, Prakash, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Prasad. How are you?
All great. Missed the first set yesterday against Nishikori, and due to bad weather and no internet connection as usual somewhere while returning home from work. And then I tune in to see that it's 6-1, 6-4, and then 5-4 and match point. So I was very happy back then. And then I watched the highlights. So I kind of missed all the four games, to be very honest. And I'm just here on the basis of highlights, but I guess you guys can take our listeners and myself through it. So that's going to be all upon the two analysts today. And starting with the talking point, Raj K, Federer versus Nadal, 37 years of age versus 33, a meeting in the Wimbledon after the 2008 final. Firstly, what did you make of their quarterfinal performances?
So both had a difficult start, I think, because Querrey really had chances to get back into that set. He had, in the beginning, he was a bit clueless in Nadal's serve, but towards the end, he broke Nadal when Nadal was serving at 5-4. And then when again Nadal was serving for the first set at 6-5, Querrey had break points. So I thought Querrey played very well in the first set, but after that, he went away once Nadal took the first set. 7-5, and then the last two sets were 6-2 and 6-2. And it was a similar story for Nishikori against Federer. He had a very good start. But then once Federer found his groove, it was really difficult for Nishikori. And I like the way Federer played in sets 2 and 3, particularly. Federer had a lot of break points. The match looks close, but I mean, it's 6-4, 6-1, 6-4, 6-4, last three sets. But it could have been even more one-sided in Federer's favor. He played very well and created a lot of break points, but didn't take a lot of them, and he'll hope to convert more against Nadal if and when he gets them.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it, to beating the Spaniard. And Prakash, we've seen this, isn't it? We've seen this pattern with Nadal that if the first set is close, if one of the set is close and you end up losing that set, you're in for an annihilation against Nadal, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the first set against Nadal, but also in against these top three guys is very critical, because I think the three of them, when they win the first set, I think their win ratio is close to like, or definitely above 80. And
I think Nadal's is like 98 or something, when 98% in Grand Slams when he wins the first set, if I'm not mistaken.
When he wins the first set.
Yeah, it's
probably, very high, basically.
Yeah. Very high, very high. And I we were watching yesterday, Querrey had a few break points. And he kind of broke back, and it was on serve. And then that crucial 11th game of the set where he could have held, and that could have probably gone into a tiebreak. I was broken again.
Exactly.
You know, it's like the butterfly's wings, right? Once something changes, we don't know. Like if we had held, who knows whether it would have been a tiebreak, because then the break points would have been to take the set and not for Nadal to win the set. So those would have been set points for Querrey. And I think, who knows, he may have taken one of them and taken the first set itself before the tiebreak.
And
But that's revisionist history, and let's not do revisionist history. What happened, happened.
So 7-5, Prakash, go on.
Yeah, so the point is basically with the top guys, if you win the first set, right, their win percentage or changes from about 80% or 85% and maybe 90% in case of, you know, Nadal, to about 50%. So that's a very drastic thing. So the first set is like very, very crucial. And unfortunately, and I think Querrey started serving first, right? He was serving first in the first set.
Correct.
So because that was a big advantage, which again, he failed to take advantage of.
Yep.
So he had his chances, opportunities, and if you don't take it, you know, they're going to pay a very heavy price, and that's what Querrey ended up doing.
Yeah, and Rajke, the score line says 7-5, and then, you know, the first set is 7-5, and then it kind of wrapped up in the three sets. But do you think that Querrey gave him a tough fight? I mean, I know the Kyrgios match went to four sets, and it was a grudge match, but purely based on technique and quality, did you think that Querrey actually gave Nadal, put up a fight against Nadal?
In the first set, yes. After that, it's difficult to say whether, you know, Nadal just lifted his game or Querrey didn't believe in himself. And, you know, I'd like to make a more general point here. This is not just about one of the big three. You know, to win Wimbledon, Querrey would have had to beat Nadal and Federer and Djokovic. So if you're down a set against Nadal, if this is the final, he's thinking, okay, maybe I win three more sets and I win this match and the tournament. But here he knows that even if he gets out of this, his reward is going to be a match against Federer. And if he wins that, it's going to be a match against Djokovic, you know. So the big three help each other out in this kind of a situation, right? Because players are like, it's not even enough to beat one of them. You have to beat at least two to win a Grand Slam.
Yeah. You know, and
several players have talked about this, how difficult mentally this is.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to see how these performances would have changed if, say, Federer and Djokovic were not in the tournament and it's just Nadal, right? Then, so I don't really blame Querrey, even if after that first set, you know, kind of the belief drains from you a little bit. Yeah, so...
Key scenarios that you mentioned, but only time will tell what the performances look like. And Prakash, talking about Federer's performance there, dropping the first game itself, getting broken in the first game, and then coming back that way. Did you feel that you know, vintage Roger Federer performance, as we spoke, was needed? And, you know, 100 wins at Wimbledon, probably, yeah, the first player to do that at a Grand Slam.
Yeah, first men's player, yes, definitely. And, he needed a good start, but I think Federer was in danger of going down two breaks in the first set. And throughout the first set, I think he had to fend off Nishikori multiple times. And that set could have been really bad, but he did fight well enough to not take it to a 6-4. But after that, the second set, the way he responded, that really made a big statement. And since then, he maintained his grip on the match. And all in all, I think Federer would be happy with the workout he got. Because sometimes you can go into a big match not being tested, and I think this was in a way the right amount of, you know, test, or like he wasn't like a big five setter, but he did get, like, you know, tested, and he had some big moments that he had to come through
very so well.
Hopefully,
and
help.
And that's a very important point. You know, I talked about this last time as well, that Nadal is playing very different opponents with very different styles. But the match against Kei Nishikori is probably good for Federer before going on to play Nadal, because both are baseliners in that sense. Whereas now for Nadal, he has to go from playing Querrey, who's a serve-oriented player, to Federer, who's such a good all-round player. So it's a much bigger difference for Nadal than for Federer going forward.
Yeah, so... Coming back now to the semi-final, which is tomorrow on Center Court, and Federer versus Nadal, another classic awaits us. And the same question that we asked, you know, I asked Prakash this question, Rajke, and I'm going to ask you this: who has the momentum going into the Federer versus Nadal match?
I definitely think it's Federer, because after losing that first set, he came back so strongly. And the Querrey match we've already talked about. I think Querrey was not really there after the first set. And if you saw the first set, you could see that when he was really pushed, Nadal did not look comfortable at all. I mean, he failed to serve out the set. And then he had a second chance. And Querrey had two break points, even in the second chance. So he was very nervous. If you're that nervous against Querrey in the first set, you're going to be much more nervous against Federer.
Prakash, Pella's comments come where he says that, you know, that clay, the surface is behaving like, you know, clay, isn't it?
Right.
Will that kind of be some bring some advantage to Nadal in the semi-final tomorrow?
I think there have been like mixed comments. I think Federer himself said that the court is playing more or less the same, but you know, there have been other players and a lot of observers who have been commenting that it's slow. But I think both these guys are like experienced enough to basically shut this kind of talk. And I don't think, you know, what Paya says or someone else will have as much importance as what these guys are feeling right there. And going by the looks of it so far, both of them are feeling very comfortable on this court. So whether it is slow or fast or, you know, whether it's playing like clay or grass, the point is that I think both of them are coming into the match with like real good form. So
what?
I would think Nadal and his team would be feeling good about his game.
Yeah.
Because I think he's been broken only, what, four times?
Yeah.
And Federer has been broken only three times, which I think for Federer, he's kind of generally used to that kind of a thing. And Nadal should be feeling very good, no, on his serve. Coming in like that. So this is going to be like, I think I think both of them are ready right now. And I think we can expect a really good match.
Classic match and a rematch from the 2008 final. But now let's go on to the number one seed. Raj K is itching and is all wanting to talk. Raj K, I'm going to hand the mic over to you now to describe Novak's performance in that quarterfinal where he faced a break point, and from there he came back and won, I guess, 10 games bagel, probably a bagel for Goffin in the second set. What happened there?
I mean, so again, similar story, you know, Goffin started very, very well. And, you know, at one stage, it looked like he may win the first set. But then Novak upped his level. And here, you could clearly see that towards the end, Novak was... It's so wonderful to see when he shifts these gears, you know. I mean, towards the end of that set, you could clearly see that there was only going to be one winner in that set. And then once the first set was done, the second set was just fantastic, 6-0. And then Novak was even doing some serve and volley towards the end. He looks very, very good at this stage. And I know that Agut has a very good record against Djokovic, and we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. But I'd be very surprised to see Novak not reaching the final. What happens there is anybody's guess, because, of course, he's going to have to play a big three. I mean, he's the only one who knows that if he reaches the final, he has to play a big three, because the others can still hope for, you know, Agut to beat Djokovic. But Novak, if he has to win this for sure, I mean, he's going to have to play one of the big three in the final.
And that's correct. I mean, Prakash, 2-0 is what RBA holds against Djokovic. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, Miami, was it, for the last time he beat, or it was Monte Carlo? No, sorry, Miami. But
but
that's Masters, right? And this is Grand Slam, and this is totally a different ball game at the big stage, isn't it? And you're playing the defending champion, you're playing a 15-time Grand Slam champion, the best player in the world right now, on the seedings and rankings, the best player in the world who's been in superb form, and I think his comeback from injury has been sensational. So you're going to face a Djokovic who's at its peak, I would say. What goes on to RBA's mind? I mean, will he has to be satisfied by obviously the semi-final appearance, isn't it? But I know, you don't go there to lose. You go there to put up a fight.
With reaching the semi-final, he's in big trouble.
Do we expect a five-setter then?
No, I do not expect a five-setter. I think I expect it to be a straight-set affair for Djokovic. But the thing, obviously, RBA has, you know, these two wins that he can draw. And if I guess Fazenda are, you know, a good team, I would be telling him to basically, obviously, draw confidence from that. But the problem, I mean, how good we'll have is that both those matches, he lost that first set. And I think, I don't know if he was even down a break in the second, but at least in one of those matches, I think he was down a break in the second, if I'm not mistaken. But definitely lost the first set in both matches. And still he won it in three. That will not be an option, as we just talked, right?
Yeah.
This is, in Grand Slams, you do not want to lose the first set to these guys.
100%. Yeah.
So that is something I'm sure I'm hoping Agut and his camp are talking about. You know, that, that first set, I mean, I personally don't know what these player camps, you know, going up against these guys talk, but I think looking at these numbers and seeing how big that first set is, it should be centering on that. That, that first set is basically you play for your life.
Oh, yeah.
Just eke that out somehow, you know, because it makes a monumental difference. And of course, then you have to build on that. But at least when you go into a match, you need to go with that kind of a mindset.
Rajki was waiting there. Rajki was waiting to pounce there. I think if you did, no, said, if no, you don't build on it. That,
you know, Key did this. He won the first set, and as Prakash was saying, the important thing also, it's tough enough to win the first set, but you just can't afford to relax after that.
And yeah, I think correct.
Exactly. To relax a little bit, Roger jumped all over him. You know, 3-0 after that. These guys and are. That, you just cannot relax against them. They're always going to be there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing is, see, if, I mean, that kind of thing happens, right? You just, you know, take your hat off and say, you know, too good. If you know, the guy can come back from that one, because, as I said, it's like a 50% chance.
Yeah.
And if he can't, I mean, that's basically good on him. But
Berrettini,
you got to go for that.
Yeah, and Berrettini asked Federer how much he owed him at the net for the tennis lesson. So,
are you guys happy with that? I don't know. I don't think that's the right attitude, unless he was joking. I don't know the context.
Absolutely. Yeah. No one's happy, you know. And, you know, that's our next point, by the way, Rajke, because a tweet from Prakash that says, you know, 12th Grand Slam in a row with a champion is 30+. The last time a Grand Slam champion, you know, it was Andy Murray. Was below 30 at the Wimbledon.
Almost 30 there.
Yeah, almost 30. And
29 years, you know, old, I think.
So. And that's disappointing, isn't it? We want to see more of the new blood come in and challenge.
No, I'm okay with them not winning, but at least they should have the right attitude. They should give it a fight. Like Tsitsipas, I absolutely love his attitude. Trust me, if he had lost to Federer in that kind of an embarrassing fashion after having a great grass court season, he's not going to sit back and laugh about it. The guy is incredibly driven. That's what I like. Among the many things I like about Tsitsipas, same for Felix. You know, these guys are, Felix is already talking about how expectations are there on him and he has to live up to that. You know, you just don't lose a match against Federer and have that attitude. So I'm okay with people trying. And I understand that, as I said, it's difficult to beat two of these guys to win a Grand Slam, but you have to try and you have to be very sad if you lose and you have to be determined to come back even stronger, you know. And even as a joke, I just felt disappointed that Berrettini, you know, this is the first thing he says at the net, right? That thank you for the tennis lesson. That's just not right.
True, but I think the counterpoint to that I would make is that I think Berrettini, right? I think, at least, I mean, I feel sometimes, you know, Tsitsipas, for example, after the first round, I don't remember his exact tweet or statements, but it looked like that he was very disappointed, you know, and that is not good either, you know. Sometimes it's okay to laugh off a loss, I feel, you know, because it's good to have a short-term memory when it comes to losses. And I think Berrettini, at least, I feel, he is very, so far he has achieved pretty good, actually. You know, he's been very much under the radar. And as I mentioned, I think before that match against Federer, he just won his first match on the tour in 2018. And it's been a pretty good rise for him. And he has won two titles this year, right? One on clay and grass. So I think he's headed in the right way.
Of course. I mean, he's very talented. I'm not denying any of that.
Right. And I think there are two different ways to, you know, or many different ways to skin a cat. And I'm thinking Berrettini is not exactly, I'm okay with it. I want to see further, you know. I'm pretty sure this guy is going to fight pretty hard next time he plays Federer. I think he's going to be there. I mean, he would have definitely learned from this, I feel. We will see, though. You know?
So all the talking points done for the big semifinals. I mean, the top three are still there, and you know, like Raj K said, if you beat one, at the back of the mind, you know, you have to face the another one, and then another one, and that in that way, the big three kind of help themselves, but they are in the league of their own. And I've read a tweet saying that, you know, we should have a super league of the big three. Just let them play round robin games and, you know, at the four majors. So what would you like to say on that, Rajke? If something like that were to happen, I mean, obviously it's just a thought, because this is all these Grand Slams are traditional, and you know they will go on and on. They have been built up to this point. But if there was an idea of a super league or something like that, what would you say on that?
No, I think I like the current format very much, you know, because first of all, there's always a chance that one of them may lose before the final. I mean, this did not happen at French Open before the semifinal. It didn't happen at French Open. It didn't happen here. But like, for example, at Australian Open, Federer lost to Tsitsipas, and US Open, Federer lost to Millman. And we've seen Nadal and Djokovic lose as well to other players, you know, and that's very dramatic because the big three are so respected. When they lose, that's a dramatic upset as well. You know, and so I don't know, those are some of the most memorable moments, right? I mean, like Kyrgios upsetting Nadal in 2014, or Millman beating Federer last year, or Thiem beating Djokovic. You know, we remember all these. These are career highlights for these other players, some of them, you know, and so that adds to the drama. So I don't know. I like the current format a lot. So let's just stick to it. But as you said, it's an interesting thought that how dominant these three are. And let's see how long they can keep it up. I find in press conferences, they're increasingly asked, all three of them, about the other two as well. And they always say that they don't want the young generation to take over. They say this jokingly, but I'm sure they're half serious as well. And they are trying their best to keep the young generation away. So the next few years are going to be fascinating. Right? Let's see.
Absolutely. And, you know, just not to disappoint our listeners as well and give them some stats. Like we mentioned, 12th Grand Slam in a row for a champion age 30 plus, back to back. Then we have the big three in the Wimbledon semifinals for the first time since 2007. The big three, I mean, 1, 2 and 3. Djokovic 1, Federer 2, Nadal 3. And then you also have Nadal, who overtook Connors to move into the third place for the most Grand Slam semifinals, which is 32. Connors has 31.
Yeah, now the big three have the most slams among all players, and also the most semifinals among all players. So.
And then you also, we can't, you know, go away from this. Players winning 100 matches at a single Grand Slam. Chris Evert, 101 at US Open, and Martina Navratilova, 120 at Wimbledon, and now Federer at 100. If you are wondering where I'm reading these stats from, you have to go to this Twitter account called Donald Tendulkar and just go through the recent tweets, and you are in for a treat there. So that's Prakash, that your the Prakash Twitter handle that you're witnessing. And obviously, the link will be in the description below. Like, guys, if you've checked out the descriptions, I put your Twitter handles in them, so for our listeners to find and follow you. And also, also 14th grass court semi-final for Djokovic, Prakash. And that ties with Murray for the second amongst active players. Only Federer has more, obviously, and double the number, 31.
Yes. Yeah, he's actually more than both those two put together.
So, all in all, a fun episode. And, you know, Prakash, anything that you and Rajke would like to say before we wrap this up and then meet after the final?
No. One immediate thing was just about the stat you mentioned, right? So it's going to be a little a diversion from our main topic, but It's very interesting that the fourth guy on that list of active players with most Grand Slam most grass court finals, is Richard Gasquet. And so I found that very interesting that, you know, Gasquet, of course, I mean, they are smaller tournaments. You know, I think Nottingham, he was like, they called the Federer of Nottingham because I think in 2005 and 6, he won it back to back. So, but yeah, I mean, that tells us about Richard Gasquet. Anyway, coming to the semifinals right now, I think definitely, you know, we got a very, very big match with Federer and Nadal in one of them. And Djokovic.
By the way,
and,
what's your prediction for that? You never gave your prediction.
For Federer and Nadal, I'm thinking Federer will win it in four sets.
Ah, okay, I see. Okay, so this time we agree, right? You go for Federer and Djokovic. So you went for Federer in four. I'm going to say Federer in... I honestly think Federer is winning this. Like I could even say three. Definitely not five, so it's three or four. And then Djokovic. You said Djokovic in straights. I think Agut is going to take a set. For me, that could be a long match. You know, Agut could... It could even go five, but I do see Djokovic winning that. So,
let's dramatically put this for our listeners then, you know, and like Rajke's message in the group, I mean, I'm going to read that out and probably that will be like, you know, a trailer to watch out. So there is a sense of destiny, this Wimbledon for Federer.
Oh, by the way,
you know?
I have to say, I read that online, so I didn't actually write it. But
But there's this sense of destiny for Federer in the Wimbledon, you know, his 21st Wimbledon appearance and he's going for his 21st slam. And he will have to do it beating his two nemesis back to back on the biggest stage, avenging losses in finals. Last two times he's played them, you know. And for, if correct me if I'm wrong, Nadal in 2008 and Djokovic back to back in 2014 and 15.
Correct.
So all that at 37, 1 month shy of 38, could be his greatest slam win ever and potentially cementing the GOAT debate for good. Six slams away from Djokovic is almost unreachable, and three from Nadal, who is only winning Roland Garros last 2 years at 33, will be a tall order to reach also. So get ready for Federer match number 40, and which is almost as big as the Australian Open 2017 final. Cannot put it better, guys, isn't it? Cannot put it better.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
But one thing I would say that I disagree with it is saying that, you know, like this is fair. In some sense, there's a feeling that this is Federer's last chance, but by now we should know that God knows how long the big three are going to play. You know, like it could be, they could be done winning slams by this Wimbledon, or they could be done in 5 years. With these guys, you never know. So he says six slams away from Djokovic is unreachable. Well, we don't know. First of all, we don't even know that Federer is not winning anymore. If Federer wins this, why not? Why can't we dream about another Australian or another French? It could be eight or nine slams. So first of all, we don't know whether it's going to be six. And secondly, I've stopped using the word unreachable. You know, I don't believe that a gap of three is unreachable for Nadal. I don't think a gap of six is unreachable for Djokovic, the way these guys are playing. So let's just enjoy it. But I agree with the rest of it that, you know, like it's going to be one of his biggest ever victories if he can win here.
Yeah,
but that doesn't make anything safe. And even if he doesn't win, it doesn't mean that he can't win in the future. These guys are all special, and let's just leave it there as a
perfect perfect. And the 2017 Australian Open final right now ranks as his greatest, because we all know what that meant. And if he wins, goes on to win this, I think that's going to be his highest one, probably the future. Yeah.
If by greatest you mean the most important match of his career, I think I've seen Federer play better, of course, than in 2017 in terms of the actual tennis, but the most important for sure.
Correct. And adding, because that 18 Grand Slam was a win over his fiercest rival. And
and
that
just think about it. If Nadal had won it instead of Federer, the two are level now. You know, the two slam gap goes away, because Nadal would have had one more and Federer would have one less. So both would be a 19 now.
But for heaven's sake, and we are into the semi-final, then let's hope for a great show. The predictions are in, by the way. Raj K says straight sets, or probably a straight set win for Federer. And Prakash says Federer to wrap it up in four sets. In the second semi-final, Prakash says a straight set win for Djokovic, and Raj K predicts a four set, or maybe that a longer match duration in that.
Yeah.
But if in one line now, to end the episode, you had to pick the final. Federer versus Djokovic, Nadal versus Djokovic, or who? What?
I mean, going with the earlier predictions, it has to be like Federer versus Djokovic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Prakash, same. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, Federer Djokovic.
Definitely. So, guys, thank you so much for this fantastic episode. It's always lovely. I mean, this is the most active that we've been throughout on the podcast, I think. And apart from the third round, that is, every round has been reviewed, previewed, and it's been great. So, the finals is Sunday, and it's a big day. Now that India are not in the Cricket World Cup final, unfortunately, all eyes will be on Wimbledon, because we were planning to switch, you know, between the two, but now we don't have to, unfortunately.
Oh, by the way, I have to say this. Do you guys notice a parallel? Maybe Agut can draw inspiration from that, you know, because there are the big three, England, Australia, and India, right? And New Zealand was the fourth. And like, and that's the first match. Djokovic Agut is going to be the first match, right? And New Zealand beat them. And the other rivalry, England Australia, is the oldest, the most fabled rivalry in cricket. And similarly, you have Federer and Nadal here. I don't know. Well, as a Djokovic fan, I just hope that doesn't happen. And that's not my prediction. But I just wanted to put it out there.
Unfortunately, I think that kind of thing is lost, because unfortunately, Agut, I'm pretty sure, is like totally oblivious. And though the World Cup is happening right there. Right?
The universe works in mysterious ways. You don't need to know about it.
Of course, but, yeah. Maybe that would even help him in not knowing. But
I like this analogy, by the way. And
terrific one.
I like this analogy. And 1 versus 4 reminds me like that's true. I mean, who was
this? It is 1 versus 4, right?
So by that means Federer is Australia and Nadal is England. And
England are ranked 1 now, right? I mean,
no, but in the semi-final,
in the table, they were third. So 2 versus 3. So by that means,
Agut is not ranked 4 anyway.
But among these 4, I mean, like he's the 4th.
Yeah,
correct.
And then you got to go by table position, something.
So if Australia beat England. If Australia beat England, that means Federer beats Nadal, and we have a Federer versus Batista Agut final.
Let's remember, Agut has never beaten Federer.
And that adds to
Australia haven't beaten New Zealand haven't beaten Australia, right?
New Zealand actually done pretty good. No?
New Zealand have done pretty. They have, but
I mean, in the knockout, you know, like in a final or like in 2015,
for example. And if that happens, that would be a rematch from the last World Cup final, which was played in their home. So, guys, bringing back the subject to tennis and keeping it crisp, as we all know, we got lost in that analogy, but great one, Rajke, by the way, great one.
So there's hope for Federer and Agut.
So we will be reviewing that at the start of the next episode as to what, you know, happened in the previous episode.
Sure.
And it's been fun. It's been great. We've done everything. We've given them the stats and how the matches went by. So Friday evening is the time, Indian viewers, you have to keep your eyes on the screen. It's the semi-finals. Roberto Bautista Agut versus Djokovic, 1 versus 4, as Rajke says, and Federer versus Nadal, 2 versus 3, the most fiercest rivals going at it once again. Until the next episode, here's Prasad Budkar signing out with Prakash and Rajke on the Tennis Galaxy podcast.